Blog Talk Radio.
Company with poetry. I hope everyone had a wonderful week, and I hope you have an even better weekend to follow. Hi, Rex. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing. Staying busy. Got projects all over the place in the works. You know, it's, none of them won here, though, I hate to say. But, after I finish painting and doing all the fun stuff that I have to do in life, you know, maybe I'll have something to write about. Who knows? But, so looking forward tonight. It looks like we have a nice list of poetry going on. And
cool.
It should be good. Absolutely. So now the surprise is we have Pam with us. Hello, Pam. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Hello, Jean. Hello, Rex. Good to hear you both.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
It's good to have you here.
Same old.
And we also have Zach with us. At least I'm pretty sure it's Zach. Hello, Zach. How are you tonight?
I'm better than you. Now that I'm here, I'm definitely better.
See that? The magic of radio. And last but not least, we have Laurent joining us. So hello, Laurent. Welcome to the party.
Good evening, Jean. Good evening, everyone.
How you doing?
I'm doing. Having a lucid day. That was important.
Clarity.
And Yes. And hello to Aaron Panther and Dark Indoors and Robbie's Poetry. Good to see you all out on the board. That's for sure. And, yes, so it looks like it's going to be a good night. We have, yes, much company, much poetry. We're in good shape tonight. So anyway, let's see, what else is new? Nothing else really happening on my end. Just stuff. Lots of stuff. And how's by you, Pam?
You know, just a little stuff here and there, not a whole lot. The usual dishes and, you know, binge watching and I don't know,
right.
Sleeping, lots of sleeping. So
me too. I have
just
been sleeping like
life.
Crazy. Yeah, I've been sleeping like crazy. Loving every second of it too.
Oh my goodness. It got a little bit colder today, so as soon as it does that, I want to be under the covers napping.
Yeah. That's what I was just going to say. It's cold and damp here, so that makes me want to, you know, just get under the cover and take a nap. Absolutely. Once I get warm, the nap
is
out.
Yeah.
Yeah. How you been, Zach?
That's okay.
You doing all right?
Oh, trying to distract myself from my mom's passing today, and I've been doing that all right. I've just been writing and on and off and kind of just playing games and just do as much as I can to kind of keep my mind off of it.
Well, definitely sorry for your loss there. And, you know, poetry is such a wonderful tool. It's cathartic. You know, you can kind of say things that you might not otherwise be able to say. And I think that's, you know, one of the wonders of poetry for sure. But stick with it, you know, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, and you're always welcome to join us. So we'll definitely, I don't know, kick you around or whatever we do here. I don't know what it is. It all depends on what day it is.
I don't even know. Just like passing
right.
That earlier. You know,
yeah,
hot
right.
Potato.
There you go, exactly. And Lauren, how are you doing? Things going well?
I'm doing all right. I'm at the end of a two-week build. I decided I would volunteer to build a dresser for my one of my grandkids. And it's been kicking my butt, but I'm very, very close to being done, getting into staining now, and it's totally preoccupied me.
Good. Very good. Absolutely. Well, I guess with all our hellos and how are yous and everything under control, I think that I'm going to put up the first piece, and Rex, I'm going to ask you to read it for us. This is called... I can't do that.
Uh-huh.
No, I was going to put up a piece, but then I realized that it had a sound clip. So I'm not putting up that piece. I have to find another piece. I'm just bouncing around. Let me give you this one. And this piece is called In the Principal's Office by S. Sharp. So here goes, whenever you're ready.
In the Principal's Office by S. Sharp. In the Principal's Office, hung on lily white walls, two black women, neat eyes, dark skin radiates light, yellow, white, and pink flowers planted in the soil of dark black roots. Looking opposite directions along a timeline of known events, seconds tick audibly. Press for time, the principal talks, her dark skin behind fine oaken desk, eyes cut like diamonds, cuts the girl's rope from the self-imposed hanging tree, trance of a modern world, singing old spirituals. Young, dark-skinned girl ponders two paintings on the wall. One looks forward, one backwards, wondering, who paints people going backwards? Calmly, the principal speaks. How about we turn this around, focus on future and dreams? The girl, liberated, thinks. You should have been an artist, maybe a poet. The principal asks in a warm, hot chocolate voice, you know where you're headed, honey? The young lady smiles. Time to get to class. Time's ticking. End poem.
All right. Laurent, you're the last one in the room. Let's start with you, please.
Yeah, it's... I'm sitting here looking at the third stanza. Press for time, the principal talks, her skin dark, on fine oaken desk, eyes cut like diamonds, touched the girl's rope from the self-imposed hanging tree, Pants of a Modern World, singing old spirituals. This is a moment occurring in a place that, you know, literally changes life's direction. And it's so poignant, given who the characters are, given what the one girl, the young girl, is looking at. Being able to take from this moment what happens when somebody is liberated and decides she's going to do what she needs to do in life. This poem is depth. It's where youth goes sometimes to find wisdom, those moments, and it's brilliantly done.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is a wonderful write. I really like the combination of straightforward language and layeredness of the meaning of the write. How, you know, it paints a picture in itself with words on the idea of the best way to turn around young minds is to give them a soft nudge and sometimes let them just see for themselves, to let them see the picture, to let them see the potential in themselves, to let them see that they have a choice between continuing to live in the past and going nowhere, or turn around and move forward. And I thought the communication between the characters was beautifully done in the way that the interaction between them became all about the questions and the answers. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Zach, how about you?
At first, I mean, the opening stanza, I kind of expected something a little bit dark. Like, the principal's office hung on fly white walls, two black women. I mean, that's kind of unsettling a little bit, but then it kind of clarified a little bit. I'm like, oh, thank God. And then it goes on to, I guess, I didn't expect that kind of outcome, but then it had kind of like this moment of clarity or epiphany about... I guess moving forward, and it reminded me of that one scene in American History X when, like, it just reminded me of that relationship between the principal, who's African American, and one of the Edward Norton's younger brother, who's a neo-Nazi. It had this interesting moment of like transformation and epiphany that the neo-Nazi does, and it kind of reminds me of this scenario a little bit, just as profound in a way. And it just kind of brought me there, and hopes and dreams, and it kind of benefited from all that, so I thought it was really well done.
Thank you, Zach. And Jean, we come to you. What do you think?
Well, you know, I thought that this was a great piece by Scott, Great Imagery and Metaphors. And, you know, the third stanza, yes, pressed for time, the principal talks, her dark skin behind the fine oaken desk, highs cut like diamonds, cuts the girl's rope from a self-imposed hanging tree, trance to a modern world, singing old spirituals. You know, being in the principal's office can seem to be the end, you know, and I like how he turned that around with kind words from the principal, changing the course of the interaction. So I thought he did a great job. Well done, Scott, and thank you for sharing, as always. Great job.
Hi. Thank you, Jean. Yeah, I hit on that same stanza that Laurent walked into. It's kind of that noted inference to being hung on your own petard, so to speak, but given the opportunity to move in a different direction, considering their interaction and maybe knowledge of the student itself. So that idea of walking on the back end, the young lady smiles, time to get to class, time sticking, that note to, hey, you can waste your time doing what you're doing and end up as one of those dark notes of just being one of the neighborhood gals, so to speak, or actually moving into a direction where you can make better your life.
poignant moments, yes. So thank you very much, Scott.
Absolutely.
All right,
okay. Well, the next one I'm going to put up is by Aaron Panther. And I have an audio for this. And this is called Vacant as the Sky. And I have an audio, so here we go.
Vacant as the Sky by Errant Panther. Flagstones of memory become breathing echoes of internment. Heartless, tattered curtains folding fractures of light against shadows that have loomed for decades upon these broken floors. Songs of loneliness filter through the silence, like the mocking of rainbows before a flooding rain. Innuendo falling fluidly as ash or redding leaves. Such is the mirror of fate that's been left to hold, and barely a whimper of hope still dares to dream. Crashing down within this private soulless cell are all the promises life has shed, yet delivering nothing more than eyes vacant as the sky. End poem.
Great read, Ernst. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. And Zach, let's start with you, please.
It just kind of brought to mind like a depression, like the folded tarot curtains just kind of folding backwards. And then like you can see the shadows casted behind everything that kind of looms back behind the curtains. And you have the floors, I mean, that become shadowy, songs of loneliness, brings to mind isolation. Just a path of loneliness that just kind of just ends in a very soul-crushing way. The eyes vacant as the sky, nothing more than that at the end. It's kind of a scary thought. It's like almost like a disassociative thought, like this is like just staring into the wall and not being able to, like having a dream with your eyes open sort of thing. I thought it's a very creepy way to end the poem. It was well done.
Nice. Thank you, Zach. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I like this. I actually wrote a poem to the same quote. But, you know, Scott, he just has such brilliant imagery and metaphors, or Aaron Panther, sorry. I don't know why I said his real name. Sorry. He has such brilliant imagery and metaphors in this. Powerful lines on the thoughts of a life that's filled with a loss of hope and loneliness. And I really like it all the way through. And I have to agree that the line, vacant as the sky, is poignant. And I think part of the poignancy in that is the idea that if you see a sky completely empty of any birds and anything, like it seems as if at that point they're hiding away, and they're hiding away because they know that something is wrong. And all the way through, there's amazing lines, but I really like songs of loneliness filter through the silence like the mocking of rainbows before a flooding rain. You know, that's like those moments when life seems too perfect and all the light you see in it just seems like a mockery of what's the tragedy that's to come. So excellent write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
It's what a powerful piece. Flagstones of memory become breathing echoes of internment, allusions to a kind of cell which existence takes place within. The phrasing in this is extraordinary. Heartless, tattered curtains folding fractures of light against shadows. That's a remarkable image and beautifully phrased. Loomed for decades upon these broken floors. This has been a reflection of existence. Pam quoted the songs of loneliness, and this is also beautifully done, the mocking of rainbows for a flooding rain. I'm just impressed by the phrasing all the way through here. The private soulless cell are all the promises life has shed, and delivering nothing more than eyes vacant as the sky, almost as if it's lifeless. There's a beating heart, but there's a vacant brain, and there's vacant eyes seeing nothing, perhaps, or seeing too much, having seen too much. There's a lot of emotion that I can relate within this. Excellent.
Excellent. Thank you, Laura. And Jean, how about you?
That's all my name. I'm actually trying to put something together here in my head. So go ahead and go without me. I'll be back. Sorry. Throwing you under the bus there, Rex.
No, that's fine. I, too, hit on that note right up top. Flagstones of memories become breathing echoes of internment. That is, you can read that a couple of ways. It could go the note to living behind bars for a number of years. But because of the other language, I'm going to go with the entrapment of oneself in one's own mind because of the mind has gone into that that warped angle of, say, Alzheimer's, where for long periods of time you are nothing but, as he puts it, in the bottom end, the note vacant at the sky, the eyes, that note of vacancy until you get that little whimper of glimmer of life, but it's brief in its moment, and then they resort right back to this again. So I'm going with the idea that this is someone at the back end of life whose memory, whose mind is close to the outside world, yet they can still feel, hear, and see things on themselves on the inside, yet have no way of emoting those thoughts or verbiage. All right, Jean, now I'm coming back to you.
Okay. I could be way off on this, so sorry, Aaron, if I'm wrong, but I think there was a great metaphor here leading me to believe it's the emptiness of depression and loneliness. I talk about that last stanza, crashing down within this private soulless cell, and I see that as the body. And the other references throughout were somewhat references of home or house or structure, and are all the promises life has shed, yet delivering nothing more than eyes vacant as the sky. It struck me as someone left down from a bunch of empty and broken promises. And I could be wrong, so I apologize if I am, but I like the piece very much, Aaron. You did a great job with this, as always. Wonderful work. Thanks for sharing.
Nice. All right, so where would you like to go next?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. A nap sounds good. I guess I won't be doing that, though. Okay. Okay. Pam, I think I'm going to ask you to read this next one. And, yes. Okay. This is called The Nun by Dark and Doris.
Morning chimes ring out as the nun comes in, working all through the day to care for those in the asylum. They're called crazy, but she knows the truth. Plied with meds and trapped in rooms, mesmerized and mad. Midday alarm sounds, the nun rushes in. She tries to calm patients who are up in arms. Called crazy one too many times. Meds aren't working and they want to be free. A dinner knife is plunged into her heart. Midnight bell tolls as the nun floats in, bound forever to this hollow ground. Those who see her now call crazy. Meds won't help. You feel won't help you, for she is real, trapped between realms. And
great recap. Thank you very much. And Jean, what a thought with you.
I think this is a great piece by Dark and Doris. I like the story that she told in the piece itself. You know, the four nun, you know, if they're called crazy, you know, the, care for those in your son, they're called crazy, but she knows the truth. So, you know, of course she had to be the victim of it all. But now when they see her, you know, they're not crazy anymore. I mean, it's a basic, I liked how the change of events, you know, how it worked out and how she worded it. I think it was a great job. So thank you so much, Dark and Doris. Really well done piece. Thanks for sharing.
All right. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
The image of patients being driven to murder is an unsettling one. The picture is ghost-like, as it should be, that midnight bell that tolls as the nun floats in, as the nun floats down in front of this hallowed ground. Who is a ghost? This is a charming, I say charming, it's not the right word. This is kind of a chilling little ghost story, perhaps drawn from something read somewhere, perhaps a product of imagination. But it's a short piece. Doesn't really develop too much. Simply tells the basic story. I find that very interesting.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. Pam, you got to read it. What about you?
Oh, I thought this was absolutely wonderful. First of all, it's great to see Dark and Doris do a free verse. I mean, she does rhyme so well, but this right really shows the scope of her ability. A wonderful, dark, and chilling story, right, that goes well with the picture. It makes me think about the Freddy Krueger and how his mother was a nun. So I had that connection, which made it extra creepy. And, you know, just all the way through, a wonderful, dark, right, but I do like how she wrapped it up with the idea that those who see her are now called, you know, mad. And, you know, how this woman, this nun, is doomed to spend eternity between the worlds of the living and the dead. So, wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And, Zach, how about you?
I thought it was a fantastic historical narrative. I just spoke a lot of, it was a fictional tale, but there was also a lot of truth there. With the way the patients were treated. I know that was the case back then, but it's also the case now, for sure. It happens way too many times. And in this case, someone was driven to murder, and that happens too. And it just reminded me of a certain jump scare in The Exorcist Part 3, where one of the nurses is killed, I guess, in a jump scare. It reminded me of that, for sure. And it's just a very chilling piece, and well done.
Thank you, Zach. You're right. This does offer up that period notation because of the picture. It's all black and white, and you've got the thought of five nuns, except you're going from a solid state into the disappearance angle on the back end of where she's just being dissolved in the moment, so to speak. It does invoke those scenes of, say, 19th century madhouses where the name Bedlam came from, because they were often noisy, irate, and a lot of people in there were violent as well as in need of other help, which no one understood at the time. But also that second stanza kind of hits that note of she tries to calm patients who are up in arms. That thought from Once Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest, a couple of those scenes walks within this. And that notation to the back end kind of hits the idea of still paying her penance, so to speak, a dutiful nun, now angel, walking the halls of the place where she ultimately died, where it worked, and is now still performing those duties from the other side. So nicely done, Christina.
All right,
Jane.
Okay, well, the next one I have to put up is by Puddles 33, and it is called, called Slow Read, and I have an audio for that, so let me put it up, and let me hit the button. Here we go.
Oh my God. A Slow Read by Barb Christing. My grandma always liked to read. The problem was she had no speed. The letters moved inside her head till she forgot what she had read. So she'd turn back a page or two to make sure what was there she knew. And once she figured out the line, she'd read ahead till she was fine. But then she'd softly fall asleep, and all the words would slowly creep onto the floor and down the hall until she knew not one at all. When she awoke, her book in place, she'd start again back on first base. She never turned past page 15. It was the strangest thing I'd seen. The days flew by, and one by one they turned to years. She's still not done. Her skin has dried, her bones poke through. I guess there's nothing left to do but tuck her in and light the fire, for reading is her one desire.
Great read, Barb. Thank you to SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. And Pam, why don't we start with you, please? Pam? Okay.
I think she said she'd be right back.
All right. Laurent, let's kick off your way.
Yes, I thought this was a clever, delicious bit of dark humor. Rendered in excellent rhyme. I love this story. This is very, very clever all the way through. There's a sure hand in the pen on this particular poem. The way she turns time forward and backward throughout the poem, I think is absolutely delicious. When she awoke, her book in place, she'd start again back on first base. She'd never turned past page 15. It was the strangest thing I'd seen. And the ending was equally delicious. I love dark humor. And this is great.
Nice. Thank you, Rob. And Dan, since you just came back.
Yes, you caught me. Yeah, I thought this was wonderful. I thought, yeah, like Lauren says, the dark humor in it, I mean, it's perfect for that prompt picture there. Great rhyme and flow, absolutely funny lines mixed with, though, a dash of the bittersweet. The idea of the loss of memory and, you know, the with that comes in the time, but just the sense of just complete joy that one finds in the pleasures of reading, which I like this all the way through, but I especially like when she says, when she awoke, her book in place, she start again back on first base. She never turned past page 15. It was the strangest thing I'd seen. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Zach, how about you?
It reminded me of, it was just like a nursery rhyme depicting like this woman's unique way of kind of reading until she kind of dreams about it. And she dreams about rereading it, and it's just kind of chilling. And then I guess until like she dies, and it's just this place with the concept of time a lot. And because of that, it's like an unreliable narrator sort of, and I really like that. That's a really cool concept. And it reminded me, the story especially reminded me of a manga called The Long Dream by Junji Ito, kind of like a horror story. And in it, like, a man sort of dreams, a bunch of dreams, and various of dreams are kind of nightmares too. And so, like, this man kind of morphs and kind of becomes, like, this elongated monster. And it kind of just reminded me of that, for sure. Just feeding off with the horror aspect of it, for sure. Just brought that. It was very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Zach. Jean, we're coming to you. What do you think?
Well, I thought this was well done. There was a nice bit of darkness and clever work. And I grabbed this stanza that Pam read, but then I had to grab up that last one. The days flew by, and one by one, they turned to years. She's still not done. Her skin is dried, her bones poke through. I guess there's nothing left to do but tuck her in and light the fire, for reading is her one desire. I really enjoyed the piece. And I have to laugh because I looked down a little bit to see what was going on in the comments, and I saw what she responded to Pam. Thanks, Pam. Glad you enjoyed it. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a book to read. Turns out my poem was over by a grandpa. And I thought that was, you know, a nice touch of humor there in her response to Pam. So very well done, and thanks for sharing with us, Buttles. Always good work. I loved her take on the prompt.
Nice. Because of the picture and the voice invoked, I can see this being read in the voice of the Crypt Keeper from the Tales from the Crypt as an opening monologue to the story that was being put forth. So this works wonderfully on that level. And reading it in that voice actually adds a couple of little those little laughs in between certain pieces, offers up a real note to what's going on. The humor that's read into it. So, nice. I Barb, if that was your intention, you did it well. If not, I'm reading something else into it.
Absolutely. Okay.
Well,
the next thing I'm going to put up is called Structure in My Brain by Teresa Streschenkoff. I'm going to give this one a read. And, okay, I might make it through. Sentenced to life, shackled and bound, tethered up and tied, living a bipolar life. A mind so tired, so weathered and worn, disheveled and misplaced, disgusted and disgraced. One full of confusion, mass destruction in its wake, from mania to happiness, and all that's in between. Cutting, praying, hoping to survive, pill after pill, every day you're alive. Sanity is what I strive, just taking it one day at a time. Locked inside this metal cage, the structure in my brain. Bipolar is a very hard thing, a life filled up with rain. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you get to open up with comment.
All right. Well, I thought this was a wonderfully emotive write. As I've said before, I always appreciate when people are very raw and honest about the mental health that they deal with in their own life, because I think it's so important for people to read poetry like this, especially if it's something that they feel like they're on their own, and then they find someone who, you know, relates to the struggles that they go through. Really an amazing write on what it's like living the struggles of bipolar disorder. And great lines all the way through, but I especially like one full of confusion, mass destruction, its wake, from mania to happiness and all that's in between. Cutting, praying, hoping to survive, pill after pill, every day you're alive. Sanity is what I strive, just taking it one day at a time. And, you know, sometimes that's all you can do is with your struggles is just take things one day at a time. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Zach, how about you?
It just reminds me of, like, it's very confessional. It reminds me of, like, a piece written by Sylvia Plath or Anne Sexton, like somebody along those lines. And it just brings to mind, like, I was kind of like that at that age, I think. Just kind of going through something that you don't really understand, and just encountering it for the first time, and you feel utterly confused, and you don't know what to do, and you have to take meds for the rest of your life, and all that. But I mean, all that kind of evens out eventually after you take the meds for a certain amount of time, and you become used to it, and you get the right doctors, you'll be good to go. It takes a long time, but it's worth it, the struggle, as it were. It's very well written, and it, a lot of people, I'm sure, that have similar issues can relate, and, yeah, absolutely.
Nice. Thank you, Zach. Jean, you got to read it.
Well, I think this is a well-penned piece by Teresa. I thought her thoughts were very well expressed in the piece itself. And I took up the last two stanzas, and I'm not going to read them out because, as we can all hear, my voice is given out on me. I'm not sure why, but it is. But definitely, I thought she did a great job with this. And, yes, I see she got 2 golds on this and a bronze. So congratulations on that, Teresa. Well-deserved. Definitely well-deserved.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. And, Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, this piece has definitely earned adulation, and it's well worthwhile. It captures so perfectly what life is like for someone in bipolar, like a prisoner sentenced to life, shackled and bound, tethered up and tied, living a bipolar life. And then the lines, from mania to happiness, and all that's in between. As she says, when you lock inside the mental cage and you have a structure in your brain that is kind of immutable, it's not going anywhere, it is what it is, your life can feel like it's filled up with rain, with disappointment, with sorrow. I had a daughter who suffered from it, sadly, and it's no fun.
Excellent. I agree with you on that. Start with that note as the time struck in my brain. That third stanza kind of hits it all. One full of confusion, and destruction in its wake, from mania to happiness and all that's in between. Yeah, when the highs are really high, and then you know the back end is coming, the lows are just as low as the highs are high. And that sort of mass destruction in its wake goes off on that note of the way you go from the extreme highs to the extreme lows. And the back end locked inside this mental cage, a structure in my brain. Bipolar is a very hard thing. A life filled up with rain. It offers up a note to the tears shed within its wake, whether on the note of happiness or, more importantly, what comes with the veritable load, the company, past that edge of happiness wrought. So, well done, Teresa, and thank you very much.
Amen. Okay, well, the next piece I'm going to put up is called Out of My Black and Into Her Void by Hormone Neurotica, a.k.a. Zach. So, Zach, if you'd be so kind as to read this for us, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
There we go.
Out of My Black and Into Her Void. Stardust, beam me up far away, past the memory of every lover, even the guidance of my mother. Let the stars be my compass, and the compass my weapons. I would chisel space and time to reach her blackened form, sleeping in her void sepulcher, her mausoleum of shadow. Bring me into her open arms, calling at me from the inside, hearing the pounding scrapes not fading in my dreams evermore. I pierce the veil of monolith blocking her, chewing the thick black dark, preventing her from sharing the air we crave in our lungs, until her pale form rolls before me. She opens her baby grays and smiles, the same grin I see before she laughs, reaching to suffocate me with the hug. Her love, like the greatest drug, propels me higher and higher, until I fill with every crevice of her desire. My one true love of the universe sat me straight into her, so that I may stay there forever, and never, ever leave her alone. End poem.
Great read, Zach. Thank you very much. And Pam, let's start with you, please.
All right. Wonderful reading right there, Zach. Congratulations on a well-deserved front page pick. Strong, visceral imagery, amazing metaphor throughout. This speaks to me on the idea of, you know, the conflict, the inner conflict of wanting to be pulled into someone and at the same time pushing them away. And I like that. There's such a almost a juxtaposition within the emotions of this line and an eternal struggle I really like this all the way through, but especially her mausoleum of shadow bring me into her open arms, clawing at me from the inside, hearing the pounding scrapes, not fading like in my dreams evermore. I pierce the veil of monolith, blocking her, feeling the thick black dark, preventing her from sharing the air we crave in our lungs. Brilliant lines and very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
To me, there's a lot of double meanings in this piece. Initially, I thought it was someone who was grieving the death of a lover, especially with her mausoleum of shadow. Then I read the words, you know, a little further on, desire, and I realized that this was not, this was probably a lover that he hadn't had yet, perhaps. His ability to give voice to his own strengths, that the stars be my compass, the comets my weapons, I will chisel space and time. The very strong, powerful lines, and yet he succumbs to that mausoleum of shadow, the pounding scrapes, something inside wanting desperately to get out. And I pierced the veil of monolith. Initially, I thought that was perhaps the tombstone or the coffin, but I can see that it's not. It's simply that void in which she exists, that imaginary figure, perhaps, that he hasn't yet or will want to encounter. It's filled with wonderful metaphors, wonderful phrasing, and the imagery is really pretty startling. Congratulations on a great piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. Jean, what about you?
Well, Zach, I think you did a great job with this piece. And I thought it was a nice melding of the two prompts you chose in thought. And I loved the first two stanzas. And I can carry that down into the third as well, because I know those two have already been quoted. But, you know, her mausoleum of shadow, bring me into her open arms, clawing at me from the inside, hearing the pounding scrapes, not fading like the dreams, like in my dreams evermore. I just, you know, it was really fabulous all the way through. And, you know, I'm sure if I looked at the next one, I go, yeah, and I don't want to leave that out either, because it does definitely, each stanza feeds into the next well. So it was very well expressed and a great job and a well-deserved front page pick. Thanks for sharing.
Thanks. Zach, I'm going to hit in the idea of exploration, that idea of walking into an arena where one knows nothing of. Here you've got space and the comet, stars, and everything else, that black mausoleum, as you put it, and looking for that note of maybe allegiance or a love divine that can be actually placed within the heavens as one of those clusters of stars that people recognize and get to see throughout the course of their lives. This kind of hits on the idea for me of finding that noted space where one is drawn into and accepted for who and what they are and given the love and the nurture within that space itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jean, we're coming in your way.
Yes, we are. And Laurent, the next piece I'm going to put up, I'm going to ask you to read. It's called The Absurdity of People by Laurent.
Can I just say something real quick about my piece? Or,
sure.
It was a kind of like a fun, like, Valentine's Day piece to write. I kind of just, I generally feel very bitter about Valentine's Day, but this time around, I felt like I turned it around a bit, and it was also based on that new song, Starlight, also like very, like a journey, like an interstellar journey, very much like you said, Rex, for sure. I just wanted to touch on that.
Nice.
Awesome.
And thank you, everybody, for sure, by the way. Thanks.
Anytime.
Oh, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Rex, that's why we keep him around, because he makes the big bucks, because he's smart. Right, Rex? Oh, my God. Okay, I'll behave myself now. Okay, Laurent, the next piece is for you to read. It's called The Absurdity of People by Laurent Montagne. So whenever you're ready.
Thank you. The Absurdity of People. We have created the illusion of a society that is deemed moral as a pulpit of self-righteous men of indoctrination. There are countless souls in life amiss whose path is destined to the abhorrence of provoked prevarication. Why do fools continue to believe in such things that only render them to the misguidance of their misconceptions? Evil is just an abstract notion that we are warned by the zealots that it is the epitome of our perversion. There is so much in this world we have created by hand that is the seed of our corruption. Being good implies that we know what is right from wrong, but in reality, we are either moral or immoral by choice. Society is a construct that was made to define our way of living. It was not meant to be imposed by God or gods. It is not a question whether one is a believer of good or bad. What matters is that we understand what they mean. It is absurd to divide people into good and bad. People are either charming or tedious in their persona. I fancy the idea that I am not beholden to the absurdity of people. I find people more fascinating when they humble themselves to the truth. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Zach, why don't we start with you, please?
Sure. It just it brings to mind a bunch of people living together in a society that aren't like-minded. And they're all divided by their thoughts and beliefs, and they're not united at all. And I think, like, they can't compromise very well. And I think this is, like, kind of encouraging that sort of forward progress, that ability to compromise, to kind of, like, find common ground and not be so black and white, to kind of, like, find the gray areas, kind of, like, find people together, make them, like, I don't know, more or less common together, common ground. I think that that's what this piece is going for. And I think that with that, I think this piece wants, like, society to move forward in that direction, and I think that's a very commendable and ambitious way to go. It's well written.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Zach. Pam?
Yeah, another wonderful thought-provoking write by Frank when he covers the voice, where he covers the voice of Oscar Wilde. I like the sardonic bite and the humor in this. It kind of reminds me of the conversation in the movie Pulp Fiction, where the two guys are talking about eating pigs, and you know how you wouldn't eat a pig if there was a more cute and charming animal. And that idea came to me when he says that about how, you know, people are neither good or bad. They're either charming or they're not. And I can't find the exact line, but I did enjoy that idea. I also like the philosophical bend of evil is just an abstract notion that we are warned by zealots that it is the epitome of our perversion. I really thought this was a great write on lines drawn between good and evil by those that hold the pen of hypocrisy. So, wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean,
how about you?
Well, you know, I thought this was an excellent piece by Frank, and I enjoyed reading his thoughts here. And I started at the very top. We have created the illusion of a society that is deemed moral by the pulpit of self-righteous men and of indoctrination. And I did carry that down 1, 2, 3. three more lines. And I think that Frank really did an excellent job with it. You know, when he puts these pieces out, they are very thought-provoking and very well put together. And I think he usually hits the nail on the head. So nice job, Frank, and thank you so much for sharing with us. Awesome. Awesome work.
Thank you, Gene. And Laurent, you got to read it. What about you?
I thought it was very clever. I enjoy his Oscar Wilde pieces. He always sounds so damn intelligent about it. Leaves me feeling a little bit small. But in this particular case, like, it's so bold as to challenge some of his assumptions. Now, when you get into a poem like this, and you start to get into good and evil, bad, moral or immoral, it's all a point of view, isn't it? Is the terrorist a terrorist and immoral, or is he the freedom fighter? That's an old saw that I'm sure you're familiar with. When he says, it is not a question whether one is a believer of good or bad, what matters is that we understand what they mean. That's a kind of a cynical attitude to me. If you understand bad and choose to be bad, because I do believe that evil does exist. And he says evil is just an abstract notion. Not that abstract anymore. I see evil popping up in every way, in every direction. It's uncanny, but skillfully written. You know, we could argue all day long about assumptions, but his ability to write what he believes is beautifully done in this poem.
Nice. He does offer up that note of thought that Oscar would have had back in the day in the late 19th century, walking into his death in the early 20th. The idea of there is so much in this world that we have created by hand that is the seed of our corruption. Definitely. Everything that Oscar hinted at, wrote about back then, walked himself forward. So being good implies that we know what is right and wrong. But in reality, we are either moral or immoral by choice. Again, that note. You can offer up the prevarications which disguise the note of who and what one is. But if you don't own the truth yourself, then what's the point? And he does hit on that idea. I think the idea that I'm not beholden to the absurdity of people, I find people more fascinating when they humble themselves with the truth. It's gotten to that stage where lies walk themselves too easily, where the truths are buried never to be heard. So, nicely done, Frank.
Nice.
All right. Oh, Gene. Did I get you, Gene?
You did. Yes, you did. Okay, now the next piece I'm going to put up, Pam, I'm going to ask you to read this one. It's called Comparison is a Thief of Joy by Hetz. So here we go.
The old gazebo freed from the 10-year weight of dry branches of wild vine, cobwebs and abandoned bird nests, it took a breath with its wooden lungs, then soaked up the new glaze that I offered in strokes. A cloud of rosemary mint fragrance floated around, hanging above the gazebo, the same as a protective dome over the little prince's rose. I'm as if that rose. I put my feet on the table, breathed in the sun-setting air, looked at my scratched feet and hands, broken nails. This work therapy made sense. The air silently breathed, the calm of the night, early night. An owl hooted, hoo-hoo, in the distance. My chest moved in the rhythm of the calm heartbeat. The moon was full and as a reflector burning into the darkness. Before I used to hide my eyes with my veins. Now I turn my face to the glow and my inner shoe heard. I'm the star and I am enough. And home.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Gene, why don't we start with you, Peyton? What do you think?
Sure. What a great piece. It looks like the prompt was by Frank S. Gaspar, The Prayer of the Quiet Gaze. I like the sound of that right there, and I think that she captured that. The old gazebo freed from the 10-year-old weight of dry branches of wild vines. You know, it's one of those things, you know, that the job was satisfying and it brought her to a different place from what I see. A cloud of rosemary and mint fragrance floated around, hanging above the gazebo, the same as a protective dome over the little prince's rose. You know, we just did the little prince, right, Pam? 2 weeks. Two different shows. But I think that she did a great job with it. Where did I... here it is. I put my feet on the table, breathed in the sunsetting air, looked at my scratched feet and hands, broken nails. This work therapy made sense. The air silently breathed the calm of the early night. I think that really it suits that the prompt very well. So Hatsa, I think you did a great job with this, and I'm glad you shared it with us tonight. Well done.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, I think that the personification of the gazebo, followed by its wonderful description, and its the metaphorical use of the little prince's rose, is so apt, because the little prince protected that rose with a protective dome to make sure that nothing happened to it. And that's what that gazebo is doing for her. It's allowing her to find a place, a space where she can just put her feet up and breathe the sunsetting air and not compare herself to anything else or the moment to anything else, because as the title states, comparison is the thief of joy. And she knows her joy now. Now I turn my face to the glow, my inner she-wolf bird. I'm the star, and I am enough. Bravo.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Pam?
This was such a beautiful and... Yep, and it was an honor and a pleasure. This is such a beautiful and brilliant write and a well-deserved goal. I did like that she brought the little prince and the rose in there. And I like the general messages of this write, which speaks to me on the idea of that in someone learning to fix up the gazebo and taking time to take care of the gazebo, they learn to take care of themselves. And, you know, they see the worth of the gazebo and they begin to see the worth in themselves. I also like how this has involved so many of the senses, and it's the idea that the inner wolf within us that deeply connects with the night, sense, sight, and sound. Wonderful, wonderful lines all the way through, but I think that ending just beautifully wraps it up. And I have to say that another thing I absolutely love is a cloud of rosemary mint fragrance floated around. That is such a beautiful and enthralling line. Very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Pam. And Zach, how about you?
I thought it was a wonderful piece depicting like a decrepit gazebo, sort of like with kind of like used with some rough mileage on it. And I thought there were some parallels between that and the speaker with the broken nails and then, like, undergoing a transformation as, like, the vines break. And I guess so, and like you said, the same could be said with the speaker who has just kind of liberated themselves. And there's some parallels between that, the gazebo, and the wolf mentioned that appears. And it's just a wonderful concrete narrative journey from beginning, middle, and end, and it was very well done. Now, I just wanted to mention that I'm going to take off now, folks. I got to take my meds and pass out because I got an early day ahead of me tomorrow. I'm going to meet a lifelong friend tomorrow, so I'm sorry, folks. I'm going to have to take off.
No problem, Zach. Have a great night and get some rest.
Okay.
Enjoy your day.
Yeah.
See you next time.
All right.
Thank you, Zach. And
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Thanks, y'all. Take care.
Okay, you too.
Okay. I like so, this for the simple notation of what it offers you. There's that note to both literal, figurative, and metaphorical thought within this, that idea with it, the old gazebo. There's also up a note to working hard to putting something back together. But it also hits that, especially with that 10-year weight of dry branches of wild vines. It offers up that note of clearing out the soul and the mind of that which you have let build up, the baggage, so to speak, over the years. The 10-year thought maybe comes with the idea of death and admitting to its finality, and then using the gazebo itself as that note of clearing out all of that mass of issues, items that you've stored away in your mind. Now, the back end of this, the print over the little roses, little prince's rose, I'm as if that rose. So there is that note of whether it's a father or a husband, boyfriend. Now, the back end of this rolls into that note of putting one's legs up on the table and enjoying the cool night air and everything that comes with it, getting back into that mode of seeing once more through eyes that were once closed or hung over with those bangs, so to speak. The idea of looking at life anew, recreating oneself, and living again as for yourself instead of for what you've pined over with that 10-year wait. So, well done, Hans. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Okay, Rex, the next one I'm putting up is for you. And this is called An Unkindness by S.R. Wolf. And this is a three-way collaboration, Aphasiana, Infinite Destruction, and S.R. Wolf. So whenever you're ready. I think you only need one voice.
Okay. An Unkindness by S.R. Wolf, Aphasiana, and Infinite Destruction. Onyx feather rides the zephyr, a beak shredding necrotic leather. Odin fears, hearing them nevermore, brought in memory, evasive sore. Shrouded forevermore in ink-stained skies, coring in vain eyes alight with jury blight. Nevermore did the poor beast of ebony store, as the shrilling's call rang throughout that bleary night. Oh, the feathered blight, black as sackcloth at night, ferrying and carrying souls that tarry here onto their eternal flight. His flapping tail, tapping talon terror, a bearer of unfair news, takes away the playing pulse, a rhythmic ending of believer and cynics in use. Unplanned osteomancy as hollow bones scatter, casting wisdom overlooked as refuse matter. Fate whispering final warning, the jury drops of mourning. Shrilling becomes more fervent, pulled forth from taut throat, as intelligent eyes gleam and glow, a vibrant hue of black and foam. Stare down below through murky depths of scarlet rose, hollowed out bones rattle and prattle as the beast sits regally upon his throne, foreshadowing what's to come. The flailing its tail, dare ye attempt escape and still fail? Lift the veil of this journey's end, setting its sail. His gnashing of teeth, wailing, face this wrath oblique, unto the end of sleep, be ye tenderly taken by bird and beak. Corbin's death crunch, ribs of craven oppressors, ye exhale obscene ink-dipped feathers. Tick-tock, the clock struck beating rapidly in its enclosure of deadly prose. Cadaverous hand is nigh stretching forth from billowing cloak of gilded ebony. Unto thee, ye ravens of three, an unkindness hath delivered. Shall this gift delight or fill me with infant quiver? And boom. All right, Narok, why don't we start with you?
Really? Oh, nice. I was just deciding how I was going to evaluate this rather wonderful piece. First, I'll address the vocabulary. It's really excellent. He uses vocabulary in a way that is not tedious, but it's very, very thorough. Shrilling becomes more fervent, pulled forth from taut throat, as intelligent eyes gleam and glow, a vibrant hue of black and cold. there's a finality to his statement. This is a wonderful look at the raven or the crow. At first, it reminded me of Poe's raven, of course. There are elements of that in this, but it is also, to me, a little bit of Shakespeare. Tick-tock, the clock struck beating rapidly in its enclosure of deadly prose. Cadaverous hand is nigh stretching forth from billowing cloak of gilded ebony. He draws the images out beautifully. Again, using language that is really quite pleasing to read. And Unkindness, outstanding piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Lamont. Pam?
Yes, this is a wonderful collaboration between the three of them. You know, I don't oftentimes see collaborations done with two people, and the fact that they pulled it off with these lines that flow together nicely works really well. Great rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery and metaphors. They're definitely dark and haunting. An epic tale that speaks on the forewarning to death and the realization that life is coming to an end and that the Grim Reaper is stalking you. Wonderful lines throughout and just very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Jean, what about you?
Forgot my name again. I see how it is. I thought the three of them did a great job with this this piece. I thought it was well penned and rather seamless. They seemed to work very well together. And I did pick the, let me see what I did, one, two, the fourth, fifth, and sixth stanzas. I think that they were just really the meat of the poem itself, but very well written and a great job by all three. So it was well penned, Darkness. Nice job. Thanks for sharing.
Nice, thank you. Rock, you hit on that. There is Poe in this, yes, and Shakespeare, and a touch of Viking lore with that note in this, on that feathered blight, black as sackcloth at night, burying and carrying souls that tarry here on the eternal night. This flapping tail, tapping talon, terror, bearer of unfair news, takes away the playing point, a rhythmic ending of believer and cynic swimming. That note to the balcony, almost right in that stand. So I'm guessing Faziana gets into her love of Viking lore, shield maiden, and goodies like that. But this does walk itself quite well into that note of death and how it comes, where it might offer up its note, as well as those touches of almost playful note to that which is about that thought in the finish. Unto thee, the ravens of three, thy kindness hath delivered, shall this gift or fill thee with instant favor. That note to ravens three, kind of almost that a nodding note to Shakespeare for the three witches around the cauldron. All right, Jane, we're back at two.
Well, this next piece is called Wisteria by SSM. So I'm going to give this one a read. The violet flowers on our morning trails, hanging in bunches high on trees. They bud and bloom, stay in their majesty for days, looking so marvelous, don't they? It's not like they are looking for some grand purpose to justify their existence. They're just there being themselves, each flower resembling others, yet carrying its own unique scent and shape, touching lives, bringing smiles, letting their inner light shine the world. And then they wither naturally, or are windswept to an early fall, to be one with the earth, nurturing others that are, and that are yet to come. We humans are no different in poem.
Great reading. Thank you very much. And Pam, why don't you need a call?
Okie dokie, Smokey. Yeah, I love this beautiful imagery and amazing extended metaphor. I really like how she compares people to these flowers and offers up a life lesson on the idea that we need to be true to ourselves, you know, not necessarily care about the opinions of others, and realize that, you know, in the end, we all return to the soil. Really great lines all the way through, but I do like the way she wraps this up with, and that are, to be one with the earth, nurturing others that are and that are yet to come. We humans are no different. The idea that we need to not only think about our generation, but the next generation, you know, and all the way through, great lines. But, and another thing I really like is they are just there being themselves, each flower resembling others, yet carrying its own unique scent and shape. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, I have to agree with Pam. The way that the wisteria is a metaphor for ourselves, for human beings, who basically do the same thing. I mean, we're all unique in scent and shape to some extent, and we touch lives, bringing smiles, letting their inner light shine into the world. That is, you know, if you're a good person, if you're a kind person, if you're a beautiful person, perhaps. And then we do wither naturally, like the wisteria. So I thought the comparison was very, very apt. Well done, beautifully written.
Nice. Thank you, Laura. And Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
I thought this was nicely penned, and I thought her thoughts were very nicely expressed. I thought it was a great job and a fine share. I picked it up here, touching lives, bringing smiles, letting their inner light shine in the world. Her comparison is wonderful between the flower and us as human beings. And I took it down to the end. I just thought that was, I could have picked up more about the flowers, but I thought that was sufficient. So very well done, and thank you so much for sharing with us, SSM. Great job.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Thank you, Jean. Yeah, I like the literality that walks into the metaphorical angle. And anyone's ever seen wisteria, when they bloom, those huge hanging vines off of the trees are gorgeous, and they do reflect quite a bit in nature itself, which is the reason she hit up and fit onto the angle at the bottom end. Humans are no different. So well done, SSM. Thank you.
And congratulations on the gold. She just got a gold on that not that long ago. So excellent piece.
Oh, cool.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so that was me. And now I have to go to Pam. So let me grab Pam's piece. And I don't know if I did that right or not. Well, either way, it'll work. And this piece is called Legend of Saint Bernard. Bernand? How do you pronounce that, Pam?
I pronounce it Bernand.
Bernand. Okay. Sorry. Oh, I want to say Saint Bernard because, like, you know, that's what comes into my brain. Oh, it's terrible. Okay, so here we go. The Legend of Saint Bernard by Pam Ray. And I have an audio for this one. So let me put this up.
The Legend of the Saint Bernard. The ocean waves of soothing balm seemed guided by a deity with genteel palms. The sky was laced with flowers of light. The angels sang within the night. The men sang bold, a time so blessed, their minds at ease, their hearts at rest. Surely chosen above all of humanity, traveling to riches upon the sea. Grand explorers of the waters vast, maestros of all sails and masts, heading towards an unknown land to march bold upon its golden sands, to gather treasures of the gods, to sail home to glorious lauds. But the fates had different plans in mind, and nature began a twist unkind. The gathering clouds, dark and ominous, brought doubt onto the sailors' confidence. By wind and waves they were violently tossed, prayers were pleaded, hearts were crossed. These men were valiant beyond compare, yet trembled within the unholy air. An illumination of an eerie blue spoke of cruel fates collecting dues. Devils rode upon a hell-birth fire, messengers of their demonic sire. The men fought with bravest hearts as plank by plank was ripped apart. Their ship Christian, the Saint Bernard, convulsed and groaned unrestrained. Sailors grieved for the lives they'd miss, the home-baked bread and lover's kiss. They shouted out with great defiance, a final moment of grand alliance. Never was a mystical fortune found, for death pursued as a baying hound. They sank, gathered into Rand's strong net, an eternal tomb, both cold and wet. Their bones were lost to a watery cradle, but their legend passed around the table. The legends grew greatly detailed of men who fought leviathans and failed. Sailors claimed by the gluttonous sea, forever imprisoned, never to be free. Tales told throughout generations, a warning to all piggish nations. Seek not the treasures of the gods, nor aspire for mankind's applause, but seek instead the heavenly love, the olive branch, and the dove. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. And you want to say something about it before we get into it?
No, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I will say it was inspired by poetry of Cicely Fox Smith. And as I put in my AN, Ran is the ancient Germanic goddess of the sea that collected the drowned sailors in her net. And Saint Bernard is the patron saint of voyagers. There you go.
Well, that's perfect. All right. Jean, why don't you lead us in?
Yeah. Pam, this is a great piece. I love the rhyme and meter throughout. I love the story you told. And I did not know who Saint Bernard was, so I'm glad you put it down there in your author's notes for me. And Ran as well. I did not know who that was. Sorry. In reading your author's notes, I went, oh, okay. It reminded me a little bit of a piece I had written a long time ago about sailors on a ship and the storm and what have you. But this is much more intricate than mine was. Mine had didn't have as much happening in it. But I think you did a fine job between the storm and the ship. You know, it's being torn apart and all that. I think that was great. And then, and only then, did you bring in Saint Bernard, yes, and ran later on down into it. So at first you just think it's just a terrible circumstance, but then you pulled it together nicely in the last few stanzas. And well done. And I love the way you ended it. Seek not the treasures of the gods, nor aspire for mankind's applause, but seek instead the heavenly love, the olive branch, and the dove. I thought that was a great way to end this because it added to a lighter note. So, well done.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you, Jean. Laurent.
Well, bravo, Pam. I've always said you're a hell of a poet. And no matter what you apply your pen to, it always seems to work. And this has the trappings of poems that were written years ago, storytelling entertainment, almost the product of a bard would come into town. And look, there was a time when poetry and song, but poetry told stories. It was probably the most popular form of literature in which stories were told. Now, that changed over the years. But boy, those fifth and sixth stanzas, two among an accumulation of excellent stanzas, absolutely gripped me. The sailors grieved for lives they'd miss, the home-baked bread and lover's kiss. They shouted out with great defiance, final moment of grand alliance. And then moving into the next one, of course, it's an opportunity for someone who is going to perform a poem for a small audience could absolutely get into. I could see the whole thing in their mind's eye. Your images are so strong. You've always got the reader or the listener in a state of tension, on the edge of their seats almost. Your language is, I don't know, I can't fault it at any point. It really has the ring and the feel of classic poetry, years gone by, without seeming dated in any way whatsoever. I love it.
Thank you, Lauren.
Nice. Thank you. This is where myths and legends are born. We forget today that back then, people who undertook these voyages were usually gone for 2 to 3 years at a clip because sailing was not a fast-paced luxury. It came upon the tides and the winds, and the men on the ships lived at that notion. But that thought you brought in here, too, of that idea from ancient maps where when they hit the idea of the world is flat, you came across that edge, Darby monsters here at that edge of the world, so to speak. And you hit on that with the Leviathan and that sort of having the ship ripped apart plank by plank, that belief in the Kraken coming to take its toll and pull the ship, the invader, and that crew beneath the sea. And you impart that tale because this is what ran. This is what people believed in. This is what they heed to because it was a grand story that they could pass down and keep passing down, and they still live today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome. All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okay, as well, the next piece I'm going to put up is for Laurent to read. And this one is called Awoken in Death to Life by Laurent Yvonne. Whenever you're ready, Laurent.
All righty. Awoken in death to life. Bound in dreams, wrapped in perpetual dawns and eternal sunrises, death calls me to life, distilling truths from my nightmare versions of non-existence. Prisoned in dark vacuum, woven into mute rocks, spinning, spanning light years, humbling within an absence of heat, surfeit of cold, shall I inhabit this rock and galactic eclipse and wandering ellipse into the bosom of a scorned sun? Sunfire exhumes, I flow delight, abandoning the skin of a star tramp, star child gone wild, dissecting the cosmic oneness. As easy to be not breathing, collapsed into dust, taking human form, ready to dissipate with discovery's first zephyr, as the coffin is opened by some rude outbreak of calamity, nature run amok. Silver-tipped mountains vomit flame, volcanic spewings in full voice, regurgitating me to be flung into non-history. Or the gentle apology of a reclamation worker clearing much-needed land free of ancient cemeteries. We, who were cloaked in moss and anonymity, silent stones graven which tell no tales, awoken in death to life. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Neil, why don't we start with you, please?
All right. Wonderful read and write here, Lauren. Powerful lines, brilliant imagery and metaphors throughout. I like how this speaks on the idea of, you know, how overwhelming life can be and how, you know, looking at our place in the world, our comparing ourselves to the cosmos and how it can all feel so overwhelming. And also I like how this speaks on that idea that oftentimes we see the blessings of life when we find ourselves tiptoeing around the edge between life and death. I really like the imagery of silver-tipped mountains, vomit flame, volcanic spewings in full voice, regurgitating me to be flung into non-history, or the gentle apology of a reclamation worker clearing much-needed land free of ancient cemeteries. Sometimes we have to clear ourselves of the burden of our own history. You know, we need to learn from it, but at the same time, we need to realize that there's a point to move forward, a point where we embrace the new and the possible. So, wonderful writing, very well done.
Thank you.
Nice, Pam. Thank you. Jean, what about you?
Well, I thought this was a great piece, Laurent, as always. Very well written and well expressed. And I'm going to have to take my time and look through it and leave a written comment. So I'm going to leave it at that and just say it was very, very well done.
Thank you.
I need to think of that.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go into two parts, because this first part seems to be that birther, that deliverer, that bringer of life, the note of a comet, because you roll in that note of a imprisoned in dark vacuum, woven in mute rock, spinning, spanning light years, coming with an absence of heat, surface of cold. And then that note of circling the sun, abandoning the skin of a star tramp, star child gone wild, dissecting the cosmic oneness. I thought that was a nice note to delivering what comes with life. And then you walk into a note of collapsing dust, taking human form, ready to dissipate with discovery's first effort. The idea of bringing life to a new birth and watching that life grow. But then you walk into other things, root outbreak of calamity, nature run amok, silver-tipped mountains, vomit flame, volcanic spewing. The idea of a planet that has all the visuality and the creativity of rebirthing itself ad infinitum, because that's what it does. Land gets crushed into pebbles, run back into the middle of the earth, only to be reborn again. And then you hit on the back end of it, awoken in death to life. You could also hit on the idea of one's own shortness to life. And all of a sudden, at the near end of our lifespan, we once again awaken from that death mode that we're getting into to actually honoring that which we have left to live.
Very nice.
And we're coming back to Eugene.
Yeah. I tell you, Eugene, he's never here when you call him. I don't know why you bother. But it's okay. Okay. Let's try and put something together there. Okay. So now we are back to you, Rex. Let me see. Can I have you read this piece? And here we go. This is called Analog Versus Digital by Robbie's Poetry. So, Rex, whenever you're ready.
All right. Analog versus Digital by Robbie Poetry. Immersed in a world of pixelation, I ponder, sometimes yearn for the world of the analog, whether in sound or video or photo. I take a moment to ponder what it means to take in the world through visual signals or analog interpretation, and I seek the perfect balance between them both. Ease with which digital can be used, the ineffable and uncapturable beauty that analog can never gives up to the pixel or the digitized waveform. I found a new appreciation for the analog of late, its nuanced capture of shadow and of form, of warm tones of sound that digital can never reform, no matter how many zeros and ones are brought to bear. I seek to dwell in both worlds. In the end, but I presently wish to re-explore the analog dimension with its subtitles and nuances that are transpanded perfectly by my analog form. and poem. Oh, nice. Thank you, Robbie. All right, Rob, why don't we start with you, please?
All right. Immersed in a world of pixelation, I ponder, sometimes yearn for the world of the analog, whether in sound or video or photo. And I must say, I'm right there. There are many things about the analog world that were simpler, a simpler time. And, you know, if you can find that perfect balance between the two, compensating, you know, you might just say it's digital, but the ease with which it can be used is well said. But it's balanced by the ineffable and uncapturable beauty that analog never gives up to the pixel or the digitized waveform. I have to admit I prefer a record to a CD, which is kind of cold. It lacks what the poet says are the warm tones of sound that digital can never reform. And, of course, that applies to life as well. He wishes to recapture, re-explore the analog dimension with subtleties and nuances that are translated perfectly by my analog form. That's where it brings it to closure, because we are not digital beings. We are analog beings in many, many ways. There's a great deal of depth to this poet and to this poem, which I enjoyed a great deal.
All right. Thank you very much, Jerome. Pam, what about you?
I really like this. It's good to see Robbie sharing a write with us. Very thoughtful lines throughout. And I like how he writes about the art of photography, the comparison between the analog and the digital, and the preference to the analog, because it gives you the opportunity to really truly interact with your subject and really take time to absorb it all in. But at the same time, wrapping the poem up with the idea that when it comes to photography and really any technology, it's all about finding that balance to dwell in both worlds. Sorry. I really like this all the way through. But I especially like the lines, I take a moment to ponder what it means, take in the world through digital signals or analog interpretation, and I seek the perfect balance between them both. And also, I have found a new appreciation for the analog of late, its nuanced capture of shadow and a form of warm tones of sound that digital can never reform. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And
well, you know, I thought this was a really clever piece, and I must agree with his final lines. You know, it was well stated and nicely done. I really enjoyed it. I picked up from the second stanza, I have found a new appreciation for the analog of late, its nuanced capture of shadow and form, of warm tones of sound and digital can never reform, no matter how many zeros and ones are brought to bear. And then that last one, I seek to dwell in both worlds in the end, but I presently wish to re-explore the analog dimension with its subtleties and nuances that are translated perfectly by my analog form. I like both of those very much. I have to agree with his point of view. So nice job, Robbie, and thank you for sharing with us.
Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. I, too, roll with Robbie's thought and yours, too. The idea of there is a difference in the art form when it comes to taking a digital picture as opposed to setting up the camera yourself and getting what you want in that moment. Digital is great, offers up that note where you can actually dig deep into the picture and look at a particular moat within that picture, but the analog angle holds so much something deeper. It's what the eye catches in the moment as opposed to the reflection that the camera gives you, because you're not taking it with the eye at that point, you're taking it with the camera. So I do like that note, the shadow and form. Yes, you can capture that, but you can't capture it the way the eye sees it, the way you want it to be seen in that perfect moment of time. That's why people still roll with analog cameras today. The thought of setting up the whole thing themselves rather than having it digitized. And the same thing with music. Rock hit on that angle. There, you get so much, even with the little crackles and pops you get with records, there is something with the warm notes in the moment that aren't produced with that note to a computerization. So it comes out alive and vibrant in the moment as opposed to being enhanced. So nicely done there, Robbie, and thank you very much.
Nice.
All right.
I agree with you, Robbie. Film cameras force you to develop the skill to compose the photo, and digital software is dumb sometimes with its auto settings. Yep. How true. Okay, Pam, the next one I have is for you, and this is called Waiting for the Grim Reaper by Jenny the Deep.
Observing the cemetery trees, listening to its eerie breeze, my jaded heart fills with fears as my charcoal eyes expel tears. Nothing but marrow on a rotting bone, abandoned with no place to call my home, my own. From the sidelines, others watched me fall. Now I'm just a lonely vessel that lost it all. Laying here dreaming of my dying days, anticipating when they cremate my remains. My gray scorched ashes that will rain down, filling in the signs, empty holes in the ground. Until that day comes, I'll stay here and wait for the grim reaper to stand in my face and home.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Eugene.
Yeah, well, you know, that ain't happening, right? I like how she started the piece out, observing the cemetery trees, listening to its eerie breeze. My jaded heart fills with fears as my charcoal eyes expel tears. Nothing but marrow and a rotting bone, abandoned with no place to call my own. From the lines, others watch me fall. Yeah, I'm just a lonely vessel that lost it all. I thought that was, you know, it was a great lead-in for this. And I really, you know, I like the way she composed the rest of this as well, but I'm not going to read it all because it just ain't happening tonight. But I think it was just very well done, and I, as I say, I like how she led into this piece. I think it really drew in the reader to see where she was going, and I like the way that she ended it as well. So great piece, Jenny the Deep, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Jean. Laurent, how about you?
Well, in the context of a cemetery, if you're gonna absorb the atmosphere and allow your heart, as she says, my jaded heart fills with tears, my charcoal eyes expel tears, nothing but marrow and a rotting bone, abandoned and no place to call my own. Strikes me as someone who's already decided that they're dead inside. Now they're just waiting to die on the outside, and then there's no one to help. From the sidelines, others watch me fall. I'm just a lonely vessel that's lost it all. If at some point ahead of time you run out of all hope and sit there laying, you're dreaming of my dying day, as the poet says, you have indeed given up. You have indeed died. Now you're just waiting to physically die, and that's brutal. Although it was nicely done. I like the rhyme. I like the form. Nice little piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Pam.
Yes. Great rhyme and flow. Wonderful imagery throughout. Really visceral. An excellent dark light on a life without hope. And it's interesting because when I first read this earlier today, I thought it was, you know, about a woman contemplating death. But then as I read it a second time, I began to think, well, maybe it's about someone who's already dead but doesn't realize it. Because of the line, nothing but marrow on a rotting bone, abandoned with no place to call my own. I feel like there's something within that imagery that even though there's the, you know, the idea that I'm laying here dreaming of my dying day, so it could go either way, but I almost feel like with the imagery of, you know, the rotting bone, that this is someone who doesn't realize that they already are dead. So excellent write and very well done.
I like that. But that thought with the rotting bone kind of hits me with the idea of one's own self-corruption. Does she just offer up that note? Others watched me fall. Now I'm just a lonely vessel that lost it all. So the inference is there of having done something that turned the community, her family, away from her. So now she's at a place where she has nothing in that meantime. So the idea on the back end of this, laying here dreaming of my dying day, anticipating when my cremate my remains, the thought, and then until that day comes, I'll stay here and wait for the Grim Reaper to hand me my fate. So there's that, almost that resolute note to waiting for the end to come instead of trying to maybe repair the damage done. Well, maybe the damage was too much.
Right.
All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is called Blurred Lines by Jessica C. Wheeler. And let me give that a read. Fury stretches tall behind me, the hovering shadow of a bear. I pause to breathe and contemplate the propriety of my next steps. As the rage bubbles red like a Sunday sauce over cooking, the look on the face of my child, a delicate portrait of sweet suffering. I would give it all to pull the torn veil back over her emerald eyes and restore her ignorance. For today, she was made aware of the evil lurking, her junior high walls and crop tops. Jealousy is a little fucking bitch, encouraging girls to act like rancid, petty creatures, preying on the kind, beautiful, quiet little girl, painting a bullseye on her purple backpack. While she was unaware that she effortlessly holds what fuels their bitter game, nor would she care about such trivial things. I pity and fear for them as I struggle to differentiate the blurring lines between girls and beasts. And I am a much bigger bitch than jealousy. End poem.
Mm-hmm. Great reading. I like that note. I pity. It reminds me of Mississippi. I pity the fool. And I'm a bigger bitch than them. So,
yep.
A touch of humor, even though it's about a note to that which is, the idea of a little gang of ruffians taking on someone who doesn't have their wherewithal as well as the backup. So it does hit on that idea of bullying. But I like that opening note, the bear, the hovering shadow of a bear. Pam,
here.
What about you?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I really like, and great read there, Jean. I really like how Jessica brings forth the voice of the mother bear, the protective mother who hates to see her child bullied. And bullying is such a horrible thing, but it's gotten even worse now that it can be done both in real life and online. And there's unfortunately not many ways for children to escape it. Powerful lines of amazing imagery and metaphors. I really like the imagery as the rage bubbles red like a Sunday sauce over cooking. And the idea of wanting to protect your child from the cruelty of the world and realizing, you know, that you're not able to, or you're only able to for so long. Wonderful line throughout. And besides that part that I quoted, I really do like that ending. And I am a much bigger bitch than jealousy. Amazing lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Laurent?
Yeah, bullying is an awful, awful thing. I think at one point in time or another, we may have all been affected by it. I'm sure I know I was when I was younger for a variety of reasons, mostly because I had European ways when I came to this country. They were not appreciated, nor was the length of my hair back in the early 60s. I know a little bit about bullying, but I love the fury stretched all behind me, the hovering shadow of a bear. And that's her shadow. And she does see red, rage bubbles red like a Sunday sauce overcooking. You know, as she looks on the face of her child who's suffering from the bullying, I'm very, where is that piece? Oh, while she is unaware that she effortlessly holds what fuels their bitter game. You know, whatever she has, whether it's grace, intelligence, looks, doesn't matter, she has something that makes the others jealous, but it turns around on its end. I pity and fear for them. Why? Because I am a much bigger bitch than jealousy. I like the way I got turned around at the end, super protective mom. But, you know, she has to gauge her propriety of what she's about to do, if she's indeed going to do anything. I like the way the subject matter was handled. I love the poem.
Thank you, Lamont. And you got to read it.
Well, I thought it was an excellent job here. Well-expressed piece. And you know, bullying should never be tolerated. But, you know, mama bears don't handle it like all that gracefully sometimes, I have to say. I thought they're great lines and stanzas all the way through. And I picked it up, jealousy is a little fucking bitch. I started there when I grabbed, and I ended it with, and I am a much bigger bitch than jealousy. I thought that was a perfect circle there. So nicely done, as always, Jessica C. Wheeler. And thanks for sharing with us. Oh, we love your work. Mm-hmm.
All right, where are we going to go next?
Oh, did you comment already? I'm sorry.
Yes, I did, right after you read it.
So sorry. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm just not used to you going first. The next piece I'm going to put up is by Jessica.
That thing had me, so I couldn't resist.
Yeah, right. Okay, the next piece I'm
going to
put up.
It was human.
It was like a real, serious piece in matter, but I like how she ended it with that. Absolutely. Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Jack Tomczyk. And Rex, I'm going to ask you to read this for us. And it's called Time is a River. Oh, wait, maybe I'll put it in the room. What do you think about that idea? Jesus Christmas.
Might help a little bit.
Well, I actually put it on the reading list for tonight, so I don't know what I was doing. I don't know. I'm losing it. Here we go. Whenever you're ready.
Time is a River by Jack Tomczyk. We're all standing ankle deep in the river of time, the current flowing so gently, like a sleeping baby makes a mother tiptoe. We almost don't notice how far downstream we've drifted and traveled. Driftwood floats, but the banks stay steady. The current is speedier now, nearer the waterfall. And boom. Ralph, I'll start with you, please.
Yeah, time is a river is a great analogy. And I like the way he starts it. We're all standing ankle deep in the river of time, the current flowing so gently, which is very true when we're young. Like a sleeping baby, like some mother can tell. We almost don't notice flow, how far downstream we've drifted. Absolutely true. Like in that song Time by Pink Floyd, one day we realize 10 years have gotten behind us. It goes by so quickly when you don't notice it. And that waterfall is indeed the waterfall we are all going to take one day or another. But God knows we didn't realize it was quite so close. Well done, Jack.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Laurent. Sam, how about you?
Yeah, these are beautifully written couplets, wonderful imagery and extended metaphor. I like how this keeps on the passing of time barely noticed as life is lived to the fullest. But I also like how those end lines, which are my favorite, driftwood floats, but the bank stays steady. The current is speedier now, nearer the waterfall. I like how that speaks on the idea that as we get older, time seems to pass faster. So wonderful writes and very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Dan. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I think this was a great write by Jack. Here are the lines I grabbed because I think he worded it very well. We're all standing ankle deep in the river of time. The current, flowing so gently, like a sleeping baby, makes a mother tiptoe. We almost didn't notice, or we almost don't notice how far downstream we've drifted and traveled. A lot of truth there. A lot of truth there. And I think it was a great piece by Jack. So thank you for sharing with us, Jack, as always. Wonderful work. And much enjoyed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It hits that idea of busyness, because in youth, we think time takes forever to move us into the next stage, into the next stage. And yet, we're so busy being kids that we don't realize time really flies. And then you get into life, and all of a sudden you want things to slow down a bit because you've seen the years pass. They go a lot more quicker. But yeah, you just had a baby, and all of a sudden you're putting the kids in college. And where did damn 20 years go? And you realize how quickly time moves, and then you're at the back end of life, that evolution, knowing now it's ticking the opposite way. And that brings to mind of one's frailty, one's humanity, and one's knowing, hey, it's slowly ticking down to those last notes of who and what we are before we pass on. So, nicely done, Jack. All right, Gene, we're back on you.
Well, we only have 4 minutes left, and all four pieces I have left are longer ones, so I don't think that we're going to be able to do justice. So the four I'm carrying over are Andy Cha, Rosie, Lockdown Larks, and Dan Ticino. And sorry that I have to carry them forward, but, you know, I pretty much come straight down the line. Occasionally I bounce a little bit, but anyway. There were the four that I'm taking to next Friday. So that's what I can say about that. But it was a great show tonight. We had a good turnout. Thank you, Pam, for joining us, and I'll see you on the next one. And, yeah, so great show and great company. And, yeah, we got a lot accomplished, I think. So well done. Very well done. And thanks for hosting with me, Rex, as always.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Megan. Yep.
As always, and shout-outs for the people on the board, Eric, Christina, Robbie, mm-hmm. Quinton, Rosie, Andy. Thank you for joining us on the board itself. And Laurent, Zach, and Sam for sitting in with us and reading comments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think we're just going to call it a night. And, Rex, I'll see you Sunday.
Okay.
Have a great night, everybody. Take care.